This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
We're back again, and here I am talking about an ex-boyfriend, which is really funny because I realize this podcast is called Speaking of Events. However, if you've been listening now to the podcast, there's an extraordinary amount of me talking about stories about ex-boyfriends, which is really unexpected when I started this podcast. And yet here we are. So I'm talking about the same ex-boyfriend that I talked about on our first episode, the guy who lived in New Jersey when I was living in New York City. And I used to take the train all the time down from the New Jersey Transit, the North Jersey coastline. And I would take it down all the time from Penn Station. And it always annoyed the hell out of me because there was always a delay. There was always like something happened. I had to change at Long Branch. It was really annoying. I could not stand it. Most of these delays happened in or around Red Bank, New Jersey. And so my association with Red Bank, New Jersey is not a positive one. Somebody says Red Bank and I go into like hot flashbacks to sitting in a very hot train, barely being able to see the Red Bank sign because like the train hit something or something literally derailed. And I am so happy to say that after my prep call and after you listen to today's episode, you will now have a very positive sigh of relief when you hear about Red Bank, New Jersey, because my guest today is the shining star, obviously, of Red Bank, New Jersey. And I am so pleased to have my attitude changed about Red Bank and introduce you to today's guest on Speaking of Events, Courtney McNeese. She is the head of strategic events at United Nations Global Compact. Welcome, Courtney. How's Red Bank?
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a beautiful May day. I also have PTSD from the Jersey coastline, New Jersey Transit. That's why I take the ferry to my office every day. Yeah. I don't take the train, so I understand completely. But I think after this hour, we'll change your mind about Red Bank a lot.
Yes. Okay. Oh, good. Good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. And as always, I invite my guests to share what's the one thing you wish more people knew about events.
Yes, I've listened to your podcasts previously. They're wonderful. So I was excited to answer this question. I think I thought long and hard about it. And I think at the moment where I currently am with the Global Compact and our events, I would say that this might be, I don't want to make this controversial, but I think that the best thing that happened to events is COVID, that the industry was ready for disruption. And I say that not lightly, because like the industry suffered so many hardships and so many people lost their jobs. So it's not to make light of that. And I was in a lucky position with the Compact to really thrive in keep my job. My team kept their job. We thrived in it, but a lot of people, a lot of AV staff, hotel workers lost their jobs, but it was definitely in need of a disruption, and really wonderful things have come for events because of the pandemic.
You're not the first person who's said this from different industries that, mm-hmm. Well, yes, there was a lot of hardship, death, devastation on so many levels that this industry, other industries were in need of a disruption. So what were some of those wonderful gifts that you got out of it, or the event industry did?
Definitely. So I think the first one when I thought about this question, and that was my answer, was the biggest thing is the advancement of the technology for virtual platforms. It's been unbelievable. I tell this story all the time. I do a lot of consulting too about my experience with virtual platforms and how we're using it. So I always say the first time that anyone ever came and showed me a virtual event I was doing, I was the events director at the Dairy Food Association. We did the milk mustache ads. Everyone remembers that from the 90s when like Britney Spears had her white milk mustache on.
Yes.
So right after September 11th, I was there and we ran trade shows and conferences, and somebody came in and showed me like a weird, really difficult to use early version of a virtual platform, and you built a fake little trade show booth, and it was exciting to look at, but it was like not really feasible to use it. It wasn't feasible to adapt the capacity of staff or how much cost you'd have to carve out of your budget to make it work. And then over the years, what it was almost 20 years, I never really saw any product that was much different, that was much more exciting, that made, that there was no catalyst that made me as an events director say, I want to make this work. I want to figure out how to really effectively do virtual events, because there's this amazing technology and software to use. So it was always, you know, we kind of adapted to it. We did some streaming, we set up a camera, we could get people to watch it on, tried to see how we could integrate social media. But then after what we started to see, when we really like delved into it, I felt like we had to really, really source a platform in March of 2020. It was amazing what we found. It was amazing the platforms that were out there, the how MainStage worked, how you could live stream, the networking, the use of video, some of the gamification. It was there. And now, I mean, now it's been 2 years, right? And what I see every couple of months, every time we do a new demo, it's unbelievable. I mean, some of the, even the production quality is a television quality production. And that would not have happened if COVID hadn't happened. So that was like probably the biggest reason. And then my other one is I work for the United Nations Global Compact. So that's really important. I should say that is the United Nations Global Compact is the world's largest corporate sustainability initiative with 13,000 companies that belong. Were an initiative under the Secretary General's office that was started 20 years ago at World Economic Forum. And we help companies align around our 10 principles, which are about human rights, anti-corruption, labor, and environment. So the work we do on the climate and climate action is really important. And when I looked at the industry before COVID, it had just become so excessive. And this was really, this pandemic has been a moment to stop and say, like, what's our carbon footprint? What is this industry really doing to advance climate action? And how can each of us individual event organizers drive some change within our own portfolio of events to help this collective action needs to happen to save us all, right, from climate disaster? So those are like the two big things that I think has really been really important about the pandemic and why it was ready for some disruption.
Yeah, it really was a global pause. Mm-hmm. And one thing that struck me too, and I'm not active in your space, is even seeing some of the documentaries on Disney that I watched with my daughter about seeing the what has changed just in the slight global, the pause that we took as a world on the impact of the environment and animals. And that was really powerful for me to bring to light for myself. What are some of the things, are you seeing changes now? Did we just get back to normal, or what are some of the small changes that we're seeing, or what's something we as event professionals could do now to start to make a little bit of a difference?
I think it's kind of coming back. Luckily, this is in some ways for environmental wise, and I mean, not the industry, is that like a slow ramp up, like we're coming back slowly, it's not turning on a light switch, which no one thought was going to happen. So slowly we're going back, but there's kind of steps that everyone should take, and some are really, really big and big picture for events. And then some are ones, you know, planning small. So, you know, I've been telling everyone, we do it at the Global Compact when we look at what events we want back, like what should come back in person? What events do we need to do? Like really look long and hard at each of your events and say, this has to be in person. This is value to the organization in person. but some can still be virtual and some can stay just virtual. Everything doesn't have to go back to in person. So I think taking a really long, hard look at what events you had before and what you should bring back, because that's the biggest piece of what your carbon emissions are going to be, is when you bring everyone back in person. I've heard a lot of other organizers, and we've been doing it too, is looking at a roadshow model where you're kind of going to where the people are, as opposed to bringing so many large numbers of people to one location. So that's a really big piece. I like to say too, like being really clear about your goals of the event, like setting your KPIs so clearly, because I think that then is your guiding light of keeping that excess away. That helps you say no. The excess that went on before the pandemic, I don't want to sound like I'm lecturing anyone, right? I'm just trying to be a guiding light here, but
it's a podcast. They're listening. It's all good.
Everyone has to listen to me, right, for an hour. So before the pandemic, there was so much like that social media effect, right? Like everyone had to have like Instagram moments and build this out and outdo each other. And, you know, felt like they had to create such an experience. And as events come back, like set your goals, set your KPIs so that you can really, everything has a clear deliverable back to what's best for the organization, not just making exciting, you know, wallflowers of all, which are important and it's goals for some, but making things just to make them, to make things seem cool for the attendees.
Yes.
Yeah, that's that. And then the biggest thing, this is what I'm really inviting, this is what we do, is that everybody should really, it's hard with the investment, but should try to find some vendors that help with doing your own analysis of your carbon footprint for the event. And it's not easy to do. It can be difficult. We have our third party consultant is called Connect 7. They do all sustainability work. So they really supported us on this. But we've also hired a company that's called Green Meat. They're a sustainability consultant. And they have done the analysis of our in-person events, which is not easy because you have to get all the carbon emissions from the venues and you have to calculate. It's difficult, the UN is dealing with this across the board with all industries, all manufacturing. It's very difficult, it can be very difficult to do your carbon analysis. So having a company like Green Meat go in and do contact the venue or have a database of the venue and know what that emissions is, like that's a big piece. And then knowing where your attendees are coming from, where they're flying from, Green Meat can then also do the analysis of what that carbon footprint looks like. So knowing if you're going to go back in person, I try to tell other peers in the industry, like, to do the analysis so you know where you're starting from. You know what your footprint is, you know what your contribution to the climate is, and some trusted partners really help. So those are like my big picture about just deciding to do the event and figure out your carbon footprint. And those are really strategic decisions about the portfolio. And then you kind of get into the granular, like just those kind of the same kind of things when you're home, like recycle and, you know, bring your own bags to the store. Like there's kind of those two categories, like big concepts, but then also like, here's your ways that you could contribute for every event you do, which there's kind of some simple things that since we're coming back to in person and you're starting new and you've put a pause on your event, like you said, and not everyone has a long memory. So they might not remember all these pieces that you did before. Now is your opportunity to reset. So what we're doing is we still are no paper. Like everything's on a mobile app. Like nothing, there does not need to be paper anymore. Like no one should be printing anything. I feel like that's a good way to start. Think about your, you know, so simple about, or do you need to hand out all of those goodies? Does everyone need another, you know, notebook and pen? What do you really need to give everyone, all your attendees? We're really limiting that. And then what is the recyclable material? And then even as far as at least at the UN, we don't serve meat at our meal functions. Like that's a big, the the meat industry is a big contributor to carbon emissions. So we do very vegan meals, which might sound, you know, extreme, but really trying, even if regular organizers cut, they just didn't do the little filet bruschetta during past hors d'oeuvres. Like that can help. Like every little bit can help. So those are some of the ideas out there in both a big picture and granular method.
Wow, that is quite powerful, and a lot of little things that can be done that will add up to ideally great results, so that we're leaving our children and our grandchildren a healthy planet. I would hope that's my goal.
I think that's my goal too. I feel like that's right. Day at work, and I try to do it in my personal life as well. So I think mobilizing, I think it's talked about some, but I hope that more of in the events industry talk a lot about what they can do to contribute, be part of the solution and work towards climate action. I think we have a big opportunity now, and it's exciting.
That is exciting. Oh, wonderful ideas. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing all of that. That was it was a terrific lecture. It was great.
But if someone's motivated, if someone orders one last meat appetizer, I've reached somebody out there, right?
Yes, yes, you did it. Yes, absolutely. And no more paper.
Yeah, no more paper.
Absolutely. And water bottles for everybody, not, you know, reusable water bottles for everybody.
Yeah. Reusable. Yes.
Reusable. So I want to switch gears a little bit, if you're good to move on. And I want to talk something we had chatted about earlier. I'd love for you to talk about the chasing the sun model.
Oh yes, oh that's fun. Yeah, that goes into that's pandemic driven story as well. So it all dovetails into what we're doing. So the June 2020 was supposed to be the Global Compact's 20th anniversary. So we were planning a big conference one day in the UN General Assembly Hall, so the UN in New York, and the second day was at Jacob Javits Convention Center. So it's going to be, we're bringing a lot of people from all over the world, and we have 70 offices in country around the globe. So we really have a global reach. It's really important that our events are really diverse and reach everyone, all of our stakeholders. So we are bringing everyone to New York, and we're gonna have this big celebration. So on March 11th was our last day in the office. Like everyone else, we were sent home to test our internet or whatever and never came back. So within a couple of days, we realized like we're gonna have to cancel the event in June. But then we thought, no, it's our 20th anniversary. Let's really dig in. And also, you know, it was a really scary time, and it was good to dig into a goal and produce something. So we scrambled and found a platform that we could use. Kind of talking about that, we had this great company, Hopin, that we signed on to, which has been wonderful. They were a great partner with us. I think we were one of the first clients. So we found the platform, and then we said, okay, what are we going to do? Because this is our 20th anniversary. It's a really big deal. How can we create an experience that could top being in person? So this was in June. So we really had from the end of March until June to figure this out. We had some of the program already done. So we decided, well, why don't we go to where everybody is? Everybody's stuck at their homes. And I'm not sure where we first heard it, but we decided on a chasing the sun model. So we started, and this was all live too, which is now looking back like crazy that we did all of these speakers live. Like we do a bunch of things pre-recorded, but it was, everybody was live because we were like, we're the UN, things happen all the time. We can't have things recorded 3 months earlier. So we started at 8 a.m. with the opening from Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General, launched the whole event. And it was the first part of it was what would have been New York time. And then once we got to the afternoon, we started handing it off to all of our regions. So we turned it over to Latin America. And then by 8 o'clock, we did North America. Then by 8 o'clock, we were in Australia, New Zealand. And then we did China. And then now it's like, I always tell this story too. It had been such a long spring and we'd worked so hard. We were all scared. Remember that time we were all stuck in our houses? We couldn't leave. I was homeschooling my daughter. It was like insane, so stressful. And And where we did the event in our office, a small group of us came in, we had our masks on. And it's now like midnight, we haven't slept yet, we're gonna stay up all night, and we're handing it over to our ASEAN network. And one of the speakers was live, and his backdrop was like the Bay of Singapore, and the sun's coming up in the morning. And I got like so choked up, because I was like, oh my God, we worked so hard at this, and we pulled off this miracle. So it was such a moment I like will never forget in my career, I feel like. But then we moved on and we continued on the Chasing the Sun. We went to India and Africa and the Middle East and Europe, and then ended back up going back to what would have been ending with the Deputy Secretary General, Mina Mohammed, closed us out back in New York in the New York Times Zone in the morning. And we've now done, we're doing our, in next 2 weeks, we're doing our third of this digital model, and we're adding some in-person back. We're doing live from Bangkok this year. So we're coming back and but trying to think of innovative ways to keep really rethinking how we do this. But it was probably, I would imagine, I'll look back on that as one of the highlights of my career.
Wow. It was 24 hours. You stayed up for 24 hours.
Yeah. I dozed off at one point on a couch in the conference room, but that was it. It was very tiring.
Yes.
I'm sure I stayed up late like that when I was younger, but I hadn't done that in a while, right? And not for work.
Wow, that is so exciting. Congratulations. That's a lemonade situation right there.
Yeah.
Taking the lemons and making something really beautiful out of that. A little further back, we go pre-pandemic old days, is you were working with Inc. on their GrowCo conferences for a while. I had gone to the GrowCo conference, I think we decided it was 2014. I went to the one in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And so you're working at the one at GrowCo is the Inc. conference for entrepreneurs. Is that a
To grow your company conference, I guess that was shortened to GrowCo. Yeah, for entrepreneurs. Yes.
Mm-hmm. My t-shirt is GrowCo, so I'm going with GrowCo.
Yeah.
And so you're working the one in New Orleans, mm-hmm. and you had a speaker who just didn't show up.
Yes.
Something kind of big. Would you kindly talk about that?
Yeah, that would be great. So I was the events director for Inc. magazine, which was exciting. So I think it was 2000, I was trying to remember back. I think it was 2012. It was in New Orleans, and we had booked a really big entrepreneur speaker, like one of those speakers that has like a really big author, sells a lot of books, and sells a lot of conference tickets. So he was speaking, and then we did have Bill Clinton coming, which you would think Bill Clinton probably helped sell a lot of tickets. But you being an entrepreneur, you know how fanatical some people are following certain businesses.
Yes. So I have the intel. I know who she's speaking of. We're not going to say it. I have seen this person speak at other conferences, and he draws quite a crowd. It is kind of like superstar status in the entrepreneurial world. So yes, I would say he's in terms of the Inc. audience, drew as many people in as Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton, yes. So he was the kickoff keynote, and he had pushed like the limits of when he was going to fly there. And obviously then there were problems. And I think he was only flying in from like Tennessee or something too, which was also ridiculous. Like get in the car and drive. But anyway, his flight got canceled. He couldn't speak. And now we had this big hole in the morning, and we were just like we didn't know what to do. And we were really, and we couldn't even move Bill Clinton up because he was coming in. He was coming in. It was when he was doing all the work with Haiti. So everything was timed perfectly. He was taking a private flight to New Orleans and then going on to Haiti to do work there. So it was no way he could even start earlier. So we had this big gap. But then luckily we realized that Mitch Landrieu, who was the mayor at the time of New Orleans, he had contacted us and said, oh, I'm going to come, because like the politician way, like I want to get some FaceTime with Bill Clinton. He's like, I'm going to come and watch Bill Clinton speak, and then I'm going to go take a car ride back to the airport with him. So we were like, oh, we knew he was coming. So we called his office and like, do you think that Mitch Landrieu could come and talk? It was a few years out from Katrina. And we thought, you know what? He at least could talk about the entrepreneurial environment. There was big things happening at that time in New Orleans, how they were really growing, how they were nurturing the startup community and how they were building Black back in that way. So we thought, well, let's have him come and we'll just make do. He came graciously, like, no problem, I'll be there. He had nothing prepared. He was so amazing. He was such an inspirational speaker. He told so many personal stories that inspired everyone in the room about how the city, how they came back from Katrina, what happened, what he inherited when he became mayor, what he's really done for the business community, how, you know, from an entrepreneur point of view, it's not always, you don't always talk about, you know, you're such a narrow focus on your business. You don't always talk about a larger landscape sometimes, I think. And he talks so much about public-private partnership, how, you know, a city could really help nurture your business and how you can look at those resources. Like, just from inspiration to really tactical advice, he was just unbelievable. And it was the best start of the day, the event, and it really was, that was really turning lemons into lemonades. And I will say what stuck with me from that is not that he saved the day, but it always reminded me, because prior to this, I had been in, I had started my career in Washington, D.C. and doing work at different associations. And I had spent a lot of time at events with politicians. And I always remember after Mitch Landrieu say, I had this realization, which I know a lot of people do. I'm not saying anything groundbreaking, but it's a reminder to me. There is a reason why they're politicians. Like right now, they get such, you know, everyone wants to like badmouth politicians. It's really like, you know, it's an ugly environment in this country right now talking about politicians. But speaking wise and looking at it from an event organizer standpoint, they have these skills that really is what speakers should model after, right? They know how to speak off the cuff. They know how to tell stories. They know how to make you feel like you're the only person in the audience, that, you know, they're focused on you. They know how to connect with individual people in that way. And that's why they do what they do. And that's why they can get up and answer questions. They can give stump speeches. They can kind of change the format. It's not like now there's so much focused in the industry about, like, you know, you have to have a really polished TED talk. But a politician like Mitch Landrieu, he can give a TED talk, but then he can go be on a panel. He can do it off the cuff. And that's really like the, and I'm talking, you're like the speaker coaching expert. So I'm probably everything.
I'm loving this.
These are the skills, like the politicians have those skills that they can really adapt and they can really connect with the audience. And I was reminded again, I did right before COVID, I did an event in Davos at the World Economic Forum. And David Beasley spoke, who's now the head of the World Food Program. And I had not really given much thought to him as an individual. I just love the work that the World Food Program does as my brother and sister in the UN, you know, they do amazing work. And when I met him, I was like, oh yeah, he was a politician from South Carolina. Yeah, he has those same speaking skills that I saw in Mitch Landrieu, or you see in Bill Clinton, that he can narrow in, he can focus on everyone, he can make you feel like sometimes you're the only person in the room.
Yeah.
So, amazing. Yeah, those are good lessons. And I always try to pass those along if I'm ever prepping a speaker about using those tools.
What do you remember what the timeline was when you called him or whoever called the mayor to when he stepped on that stage? Do you know how many, like, how many hours?
I was like, oh, were there cell phones in? I was trying to think. I was like, did we call the office or did we call someone on his cell phone? It was probably like he was on his way. It was in the morning because we didn't think about it right away. So it was probably within less than an hour to when he was called to when he stood on the stage.
Wow. I would love to chat with him and see how did you prepare in that moment? How did you get ready and make it such an impactful thing? And a lot of what we teach at Ovation is that, well, have stories in your back pocket, have stuff ready to share, not when you happen to need to step in for a keynote speaker at a conference, but rapport building. Also, if we need to change kind of the mood in the room, et cetera. So I'd love to crack open his brain at some point.
Yes, and really good. They really know how to do it if they're good at their jobs, right? If they got elected a couple of times, they know how to have that whole toolkit ready to go at a moment's notice. I did also get to speak alone to Bill Clinton, so that's the other highlight of that. I always remember that he told me the one thing he said, it was just him and I backstage. It was like they're not an elaborate production. Now everything's like so elaborate. I think there was like a tech table and I was just backstage with him. And he did say, he was chatting and kind of talking about the first time he came to New Orleans. And he said, my grandparents took me on a train. And I had never been to any place that had a building had a second story. He goes, you know, I was from a little town. It's called Hope. I was like, yeah, of course everyone knows where you're from. But that was like him telling stories to me backstage was like, that was another memorable moment of that event. But lots of moments to remember from that one.
That is really cool. Wow. That's neat. So you talked about how prepping speakers, talking to speakers. We're in a very different time now. Yeah. Things are ever shifting, changing, new, blah, blah. What are the challenges you're seeing right now for speakers? What's different right now?
Mm-hmm. This is what I think everyone talks about coming back from the pandemic. Everyone's talking so much about the attendance. Like, how are you getting attendees back? Are they going to come to this location? Are you good? I was in a conversation, I think, for almost an hour yesterday talking about when we should release sign up for digital versus in-person, like how do they affect the other? But I think one of the biggest challenges we're going to keep finding over the next couple of years is that speakers are used to just being at home and then getting on a Zoom. So like, how do you fill out a whole roster of speakers and in-person pieces and get these speakers to confirm? You get all these attendees there, and then what if speakers, you know, switch to virtual at the last minute? Like, you brought them all in, you entice people to come because of the program and the schedule and the amount of speakers that were coming, and then they're not in the room. They decide to stay home. And meanwhile, you know, someone else has like, you know, found childcare and got someone to cover them doing work, and they've flown on a flight. Like, how do you reconcile those two things happening? And that's something we're watching. I think we found that challenge as we were developing our leader summit this year. In 2 weeks, we were feeling and trying to figure out if we could go in person in New York. We're having a very difficult time. We also have the challenge at Global Compact is that we have to have a diverse panels. We have to have the Global South represented. We have to have different voices. We cannot just have we could not just get it, but because we were in New York, we couldn't have a panel of CEOs from New York. That's not an option. So how do we get everyone to come? And I think it's going to be a challenge. And I'm looking at more, we should go to where have more regional, focus on regional events that are easier for travel. Our Bangkok event is having that piece of it that's at kind of a UN headquarter general assembly for ASEAN. It's located in Bangkok. It's being held there at a UN headquarter. And we're getting speakers confirmed, but their travel distance and how far they're coming is a lot shorter. So we're having much more success and to get, you know, a global audience. So that is definitely a challenge. And what we're seeing, how we put that together and where we're going to go from here. And I think that's across the board. I think organizers are going to have that issue. With
speakers. Oh yeah. So you threw it in there. So I'm going to call it out that, can you talk about the panel pledge that's in place right now at the UN?
Yeah, that's I would love to. I feel passionate. This is my other passion, right? Work-wise, I guess, climate and gender equality. We do a big event in March. We did it again virtual this year, again thinking if we should keep things virtual, called Target Gender Equality. I did it really before I got to the Global Compact. I did it obviously I feel passionate about women's rights, but I didn't really understand the nuanced nature of what the work for gender equality and how layered it is and the different facets of it. And when I started, like day one, I was told, oh, we have a panel pledge that we've committed to, we've signed on to this agreement. And what that means is no panel can happen with all male. There has to be at least one woman speaker, and it cannot be the moderator, which is also people try to solve it. Like, you know, oh, we just have, we want all CEOs. It's hard sometimes to get a female CEO. So like, oh, we'll just have the moderator represent a woman's point of view. No, if there's four thought leaders, one of the thought leaders has to be female. So I didn't realize. First, it took me a lot, like, really? Is that needs to happen? And now that I've been a number of years at Global Compact, it's really important to lean in to that pledge and to doing it and commit to it and do the work. It's sometimes like, it's not always as easy. It takes some extra steps. It's, you could have this be, you know, if you're working on a session, you could have it done, put away, finish that, move on to other things. And if you don't have that female voice, you have to keep working on it and keep sending invitations out and waiting not to get declined. It's not easy and it's a commitment, but it works. And you have that diverse voice, you have a different perspective. I think that the content is stronger from it. I see it start to go in other organizations that they're starting to do it, but I don't think it's talked about. I've never heard this. I had been working in the events industry for doing conferences, business conferences, obviously, is my specialty for 20 years by the time I got to Global Compact. I never heard about this pledge. I never was committed to it. I mean, if I get everyone to do climate and gender, I'll be happy. But I hope that I now educate people on how valuable it is, because it just makes your program better. But it definitely is extra work, and you have to do it, and you have to find the speakers, you have to do more research, and you have to commit it. But it's on the Global Compact's website, the panel pledge, and companies can learn more about it and commit. And UN Women also spearhead that, and the UN across the board. And I will say that it's back to gender equality. The Secretary General is committed to, this is the Sustainable Development Goal number 5. He's committed to it, and he committed to gender parity and leadership in the UN, that half of all the UN heads would be women. And he set a goal, and that was achieved this year. So setting these benchmarks, and I should say this today, I mean, they just announced that the US soccer, women's soccer team settled, you know, and got the agreement. So yes. if you set these targets and you say, this is how we're going to implement, it can happen, and over time you will see the results of it. So this is another really key thing that all event planners can make a commitment to do, and it'll just be second nature after a little while.
Absolutely. And just FYI for you, for anybody at the UN, I am a female CEO. I'm available for any and all panels. Just call me.
Mary, don't worry. You're going to call me after this. Don't you worry. And great host.
Yes. Moderator, great host, speaker, trainer, whatever anybody needs, we're here. So, Courtney, you start in Red Bank, right? You grew up in Red Bank.
Yes.
You're back in Red Bank. There was some stuff happened in between. You want to? How'd we get back here? What happened?
No, I can't believe
it. Did the train break down?
The Jersey Shore drew me back. I couldn't stay away long. So I have been doing events my entire career. Conferences, I will say. Events is like a new term, I feel like. You know, when I started, it was like conferences and meetings. You were a meeting planner.
Right.
So we went to school in Washington, D.C., and I got a job. My first job was at the Association of the Wall and Ceiling Industry. It represented drywall companies and acoustical tiles. So I did that for a year, and they sent me to my first, they sent me that spring to go to like a traditional convention in Reno, Nevada. And I loved it.
That is classic right there, Reno. Woo!
Construction trade show convention in Reno.
That has got 1990s written all over it.
I didn't even have a cell phone then. And my first boss was Michael Gardner, and he's still like my favorite, just amazing. And he said, you know, you have to figure out this year, you figure out how to work and what you want to do with your life, and you have to move on and get a new job. So a year after that, I went to another association. I did trade show manager and really learned that I loved this industry and I wanted to stay in it. And then I did my last job in DC was at the Got Milk campaign, which I talked about before, yes, in International Dairy Food Association. And that's really where I led an events team for the first time. I really learned how to do this. I did a large trade show at the time. It was Worldwide Food Expo. Also ironic that I was partnered with the Meat Institute. Not that I feel like the earlier I was trying to disparage the meat industry. They were my bread and butter for a little while. So literally. And then after I spent a number of years there, really learning all different types of events and how to run an events team, I went to work for Inc. Magazine. I moved back to New York. So I kept inching, right? I kept inching closer to a bank. I went to DC and then I had to get back. So I lived in Hoboken outside New York. But then I was back on fertile ground in New Jersey, and I worked for Inc. Magazine. And then when I was there, I was there for a number of years, but got bit by the entrepreneurial bug. You know, which happens. And then I started working for myself, and I had my daughter, and I moved a little closer to home. You know, as an entrepreneur, you need a lot of support.
Yes.
It was the best and craziest thing I've ever done. Those years are a blur. I give you so much credit. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. You have to dig into resilience every single day. But it was really rewarding. I think that it kind of was like this place to like a jet fuel for my next step of my career. It really, it taught me how to advocate for myself, how to do sales, how to do everything, right? And you have to figure it all out and how to be creative. So I did that. And then in 2019, I just thought the business had grown a lot in DC. I had a business partner in DC, and I thought, well, let me see if I should go back in-house somewhere. And I was in Red Bank at the time. I then knew I could commute back into the city, not on the train. I would take the ferry, no train.
Just the ferry. Stick to the ferry.
Yes. So then I found the job at the Global Compact, and I didn't really know anything. It's really funny. I didn't know anything about the United Nations when I interviewed. I had to look up the Sustainable Development Goals, or like the guiding principles. They're the agenda till 2030. They're a set of 17 goals, 169 targets. They're what I live by every day. I spend all day working on them. And I didn't even know what they were before the interview. I had to Google it to go to my interview, what is this? And it was like a stiff learning curve. There's so many agencies and what everyone does and how this all works. So I ended up at the UM, but luckily I stayed in Red Bank, and now, like everyone else with the pandemic, I was commuting every day, and now I get to do most of this work right from, I get to save the world right from my living room in Red Bank, I like to say.
Yay. That's wonderful. Yes. All right. Now we're back. We're back in Red Bank. Mm-hmm. Not on the train. We're only taking the ferry. Are you ready, Courtney, for our Lightning Express round?
Yes, that sounds great.
Okay. Excellent. We're going to put 45 seconds on the clock, and I'm going to ask you 7 questions. Here we go. Courtney, what is your favorite moment in the event process?
When it's over. Just kidding. Right before the first speaker, like the second before the first keynote speaker starts.
Assuming they show up. Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, exactly.
2, who is your favorite tennis player to watch?
I still have to say Serena Williams. I just saw the King Richard movie. Yeah, they're just amazing.
Oh, yay. Okay. Who do you consider your mentor?
I would consider, I always say to my first boss, Michael Gardner, really, I think, even though I don't think he mentors me all the time, it was really the guide that sent me on my course for my career.
Oh, what's the best place to eat in Red Bank, New Jersey?
Oh, I would have to say I like Teak. It's a sushi bar. I like to go there.
Ooh, nice. Wait, don't take the train. Okay. What do you do every day to stay healthy and sane?
Oh, I do my Peloton. I'm like one of those, pandemic on a Peloton person.
Oh, nice. Lucky.
Cody and Sherman are my favorite riders.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, I love Cody. Okay. When you got milk, what kind of milk do you drink?
I do a little bit of half and half and mostly oat milk. I know it's not even non-dairy.
Does oat milk make a mustache? I feel like, I don't know.
It's like water. Okay. Going against my dairy roots.
And then if you weren't talking to me right now, what would you be doing?
I'd be on Zoom with the event staff, the wonderful team at Global Compact. We talk on Zoom all the time. So I would be doing that.
You'd be Zooming with them. All right. Congratulations. You have made it through the Lightning Express round. Yes. Excellent. Courtney, where can people find you and connect with you if they would like to?
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful. You can find me on Courtney McNeese on LinkedIn. Also, you can go on all these tools. I really want to post more about what the events industry can do with climate, but go to unglobalcompact.org for the panel pledge.
The panel pledge. Yep. Mm-hmm. And we'll post the link to that as well in the show notes.
If someone wants to email me, I'm at CourtneyMcNeese@gmail.com.
Ooh, thank you, Courtney. Give me those digits. I like it. Yes, any sustainability ideas or anything. I mean, so much powerful, wonderful things today. Thank you. Thank you for your time. This has been delightful. And put a lovely red glow around Red Bank, for a red warm welcoming glow around Red Bank. So that's it for me. Thank you so much. Thank you to our audience for listening. If you like events, if you love events, even if you loathe events, tell someone about this podcast, but go on and give us a review, like just a 5-star. You don't have to write anything. Just, some stars would be great. Thank you. Thank you, Courtney. I appreciate your time and your expertise and all of your passion you brought to the topics today. This was fantastic. Thank you, everybody. See you next time. And remember, whatever you speak about, to remember to be speaking of events. Bye.
Speaking of Events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get ovation.